the proud, the Marines.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, Tokers and Tokettes. We are deep in the middle of a radical rant. We're continuing from the first hour, and that is why I always support marijuana legalization. I'm taking a lot of heat, folks. And this time it's not just stoners against legalization I'm taking heat from. I'm taking heat from some of the big wigs in some of the major marijuana reform orgs and some of the big marijuana companies. Me. I'm taking the heat because I want you to no longer be arrested by cops in Ohio if you have more than 7 ounces, or 3 ounces, 3.5 ounces. I'm taking the heat from marijuana reformers because I support legalizing marijuana. I'm taking heat from organizations that passed shitty medical marijuana laws because I support a medical marijuana law that allows patients to get whole plant medicine, finally legalizes cannabis oils and extracts in that state, and institutes the ability for patients to medicate at the work site that no other state protects. I'm the asshole for supporting that. And it's just, it's blowing my mind that so much of the marijuana reform movement now is all tied up in the business of it. Who's going to get rich on it? Who's going to make the money? Who's going to be the growers? Who's going to make the bucks? Could this be because now the money that would have to go into any of these reform organizations has to come from marijuana businesses? Could it be that these marijuana businesses, these grower-backed businesses, don't want to donate to these major reform orgs if they perceive them to be doing something against their business interest? You know, I'd kind of like there to be an organization that doesn't give 2/10 of a tick's turd about who gets rich on marijuana and instead focuses their efforts on who's getting busted for marijuana, who's getting ticketed for marijuana, who's getting harassed for marijuana on a daily basis in the state of Ohio and 45 other states in this country, states like my home state of Idaho that can never even dream of marijuana legalization until all the other states fall. I'm the asshole, apparently, for supporting that. Why? Why? Well, because this guy in Ohio, Ian James, came into a state that had never, ever come close to placing anything on the ballot to help marijuana consumers. Never came close. Oh, had a whole bunch of groups promising it. Had a whole bunch of groups collecting money for it. Had a whole bunch of groups putting lip service and calling for volunteers in absolutely quixotic efforts to try to put something on the ballot, even medical marijuana, which they never even came close to getting half the signatures they needed. Groups that have absolutely no money or are in debt. I'm supposed to wait on them. rather than this guy, Ian James, who after 40 years of drug war in Ohio, finally found a way to get people to support to put legalization on the ballot. He said, hey, put up $2 million in a bet on a purple state that's not known as being marijuana friendly. And if that bet comes through, you get to own the lands where the marijuana is growing. And I fail to understand why this is such a big deal. There is no legal marijuana industry now. 10 groups want to put up $2 million to create a legal marijuana industry. Why shouldn't they benefit some from that? Now, if this were truly a cartel, like I'm talking, all the grow sites are owned by the same 10 companies that only, and all the processors are owned by 10 companies, and all the pot shops were owned by 10 companies, and nobody could home grow, then you could convince me that this would be a bad idea. But we're just talking about part of it. We're talking about owning the farmland where the pot will be grown. Plenty of other people will have pot shops. Plenty of other people will have processing shops. Plenty of other people will have testing labs. And tens of thousands of people will have their own home grows. If you don't like oligopoly weed, don't buy oligopoly weed. Grow your own weed. Or buy it from your friend who grows weed, just like you always have been under the black market. Except it'll be harder to catch you now because marijuana is legal. That's another one that confuses me, is people coming back to me and say, well, this responsible Ohio thing will never eliminate the black market. Nothing will ever eliminate the black market. There's black markets in purses and DVDs and video games. There's black markets in things that are completely legal in all 50 states. There's always going to be a black market in marijuana because it's a weed you can grow fairly easily. No matter how low the price gets, somebody's going to find a way to undercut it. The black market's never going away. But what I don't understand is using the black market is never going to go away as a justification for voting against something because it doesn't help the people currently on the black market. Right? Oh, man, I don't understand it. Sometimes when I'm reading these complaints, I'm taken aback by the sheer reverence and deference to illegal pot growers. Those brave pioneers, they sacrificed and risked to grow the marijuana throughout Prohibition, and they should be rewarded with the riches in the legal paradigm, not the investors who actually made the legalization happen. Well, I don't share that view. The pot growers and the dealers got paid. Whatever risk they faced from cops in prison was reimbursed by charging us tokers $300 an ounce for something that cost them $25 an ounce to grow. For every one of them who made money and got arrested, there were seven of us who paid money and got arrested. Did those growers and dealers contribute to ending my criminality? Sure, some did. Some donated some of their windfall to normal MPP, DPA, or some legalization campaign. But the vast majority never did. The vast majority recognized that legalization means the end of their sleep till noon, play in dirt, tax and regulation free, all cash income. Furthermore, when chances to end my criminality arose in California and Washington, those growers and dealers were some of the loudest opponents and even used profits from our consumer weed buys to keep us criminals. Why should I be concerned about how the people who exploited my consumer risk at great profit make out after I'm no longer desperate enough to buy from them?
The beginning of the end started in 1996 when California legalized weed for so-called medical purposes. 16 years later, Washington and Colorado legalized it outright and let people sell it from storefronts. And what has been the result?
The generation of millions of dollars in tax revenue for the states and creation of hundreds of new jobs in a growing multi-billion dollar industry?
No. Well, yes. But at what cost?
Let's see. The cost of all that police time and money that's now spent going after real criminals and prisons with enough room to hold them all?
No. Well,
Yes, but look at what it's done to the people.
You mean that fewer of them are dying of alcohol, tobacco, and prescription-related causes since they've switched to cannabis, and many more are receiving medical benefit from a cheap, non-toxic healing herb?
No. Well, yes. Yes. Yes to all of that. But I can smell pot from my backyard. And I can't tell my kids not to do it because it's illegal.
Hi, this is Steve Vetran from Chula Vista, California, and you're listening to 420radio.org.
I know a thing or two about drug dealers. They'll sell anything, anywhere, to anyone. They don't check IDs. They don't care what's in the poison they push. They control the streets. Failing to reform marijuana laws means the drug dealers win. They stay in business, and we surrender our streets. It's time for responsible reform to legalize, regulate, and control marijuana. So we're in charge, not the criminals. Vote yes on 3.
Expand your horizons and join us every Wednesday night for Gordon Green's Music Planet. You'll hear an eclectic mix of music from all around the world. Catch the first show of the month for an intro to world music. It's Gordon Green's Music Planet, Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, with replays weekends at midnight on 420radio.org. Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Welcome back, everybody. That's music from Terra Lumina, from Old Creating New. I'm Radical Russ, still in full-on rant mode about why I always support marijuana legalization. Always. Always. I don't give a shit who gets rich selling it. Could care less. I never cared who was getting rich selling me the weed when it was illegal. I don't care who's getting rich selling me the weed when it's legal. I want to be legal. I don't want to have to shop from criminals. I don't want to have to sit in parking lots. I don't have to wait 2 hours later than I normally have to wait for any other product. I don't want to have to put up with a short bag or it being pesticide laden or having no idea what's actually in it. I don't want sick friends of mine to have to go without medicine. I don't want epileptic kids to have to die. And somehow I'm the asshole for supporting all this. Okay. Well, John Thomas in the chat room. Americans for Safe Access should be in the trenches for this responsible Ohio. Where are they? Exactly. For some reason, the medical marijuana laws are fine if they're CBD only. They're fine if they're not allowing people to get the whole plant. They're fine if they don't allow someone to home grow. But this medical marijuana in Ohio that would have more conditions, allow patients to smoke at work and home grow their own plants and have a place to buy their weed and finally legalize concentrates, well, this cannot be acceptable because the wrong people get rich. I'm really scared here about the long-term legacy of some of these organizations. Think about how this might turn out. I got one guy who's complaining that Responsible Ohio, this group Responsible Ohio, they're irresponsible. They're irresponsible. They're in it for the money. They're carpetbaggers. They did the stupid move of having a cartoon mascot. And so when they legalize, the kind of legalization that will exist in Ohio will be so reckless and off the wall that it'll cast a pall on future legalization efforts. And this is a case of desperately reaching for an imagined worst case scenario to justify voting for prohibition. Because for that worst case scenario to occur, let me read to you from the amendment. And I wish more people would actually read the damn thing. They read what their friends have written about it. They've read what they've read in Twitters and Facebooks about this, but they haven't actually gone to the amendment and read the damn thing. Let me read you a very important part. This is part of the summary. It's point number one. Point number one, the first thing that they emphasize will happen after marijuana is legalized in Ohio. I quote, establishing the Ohio Marijuana Control Commission to regulate the acquisition, growth, cultivation, extraction, production, processing, manufacture, testing, distribution, retail sales, licensing, and taxation of medical marijuana, marijuana, and marijuana-infused products, and the operations of marijuana establishments, and the growth and cultivation of homegrown marijuana, as defined in the amendment. The commission would be composed of 7 members appointed by the governor with varying backgrounds and qualifications and for terms set forth in the amendment. All are required to be Ohio residents, and the amendment sets forth specific subject matter for regulations to be promulgated by the commission, and requires the commission to establish a system for real-time tracking of all medical marijuana, marijuana, and marijuana-infused products from initial germination and or extraction through the final consumer transaction. The commission would also serve as a clearinghouse for scientific and medical research on medical marijuana, marijuana, and marijuana-infused products. The commission would be required to employ necessary and qualified persons, including enforcement agents, and retain services of qualified third parties, including experts, to perform its duties. So, everything about marijuana regulation in the state of Ohio, should this pass, is going to be controlled by a 7-member commission appointed by the governor. It's going to require the legislature to come up with seed-to-sale tracking, and to serve as a clearinghouse for research. So somehow, for the worst case scenario to take effect, the governor of Ohio, who hates pot and hates this issue, hates this amendment, would have to stock a 7-member cannabis control commission, marijuana control commission, would have to stock it with 7 members, and out of those 7, at least 4 would have to agree to advertising regulations that would allow pot shops to have cartoon mascots. The pot-hating governor is going to appoint a 7-member commission, a majority of which allows the regulations for commercial marijuana in Ohio to be so lackadaisical, so reckless, that it will forestall the efforts of legalization in 2016. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's so familiar to me. It was the same kind of black worst case scenario that was predicted by the I-502 people. Well, you'll be busted if you buy a non-store ounce, and they'll all cost $600, and the cops will replace all the DUIDs with, or all the arrests with DUIDs, et cetera, et cetera. It's a desperate move to try to find a nightmare justification for continuing prohibition. That's what your vote does if you vote no. You continue prohibition.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
And I'm sorry that that makes some people uncomfortable, but that's the fact. They want to get me off of this, oh, your shtick about you're with us or you're with the terrorists is getting old. It's not a shtick. We are in a war. A war was declared on us, and the cops are our enemy. You're voting with them or with me.
This is 420radio.org. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the 4th Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
What do you think about Issue 3? It's a smart, safe plan. Like most states that legalize marijuana, it initially limits the number of growers for strict regulation before adding more. Plus, it puts drug dealers out of business. What about you?
Well, I like that Yes on 3 provides medical marijuana for those in need, and that might be me someday.
That's a regulated industry without creating a monopoly.
For medical marijuana, vote no on 2 and yes on 3.
I'm sure you've heard about the ballot issue to legalize marijuana, and you're probably wondering, does this plan make sense? How will it make Ohio safer? And what does it mean for me? Go to responsibleohio.com and get the facts.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for some Daily Toker Tunes. Take my mind off the ranting. We got Electric Bob on the line. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Russ?
I'm doing pretty good. I wanted to ask you, since you have to live in Arizona with the medical marijuana that has 25-mile halos that was shoved down your throat by MPP, how you feel about MPP being neutral on Ohio legalization?
I don't know. I don't have any kind words for MPP. And my mother always said, if you don't have kind words, don't say anything.
Your mother was a very wise woman. All right, let's get to something more fun then. Our Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tunes. Folks, on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. here on 420 Radio, Electric Bob's got a great show, Electric Bob's Boogaloo. 1 hour of nonstop electronic tracks. What's on tap tonight?
It's my buddy Iyer out of India. I'm putting up one of his Juke Bounce work mixes. It's a collective out of Los Angeles that he does some stuff for, and they gave me permission to use their mix for this week.
All right. Looking forward to that. And if you miss it tonight, Tuesday at 8 p.m., you can always catch Electric Bob's Boogaloo on our six-hour music marathons that we have on the weekends, starting Friday nights and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific. The Electric Bob's Boogaloo comes on at 11 p.m. Pacific on Friday and Saturday, so you get three opportunities to be able to hear the next show. And to give you a taste of what the next Boogaloo is going to sound like, we've got this Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tune. We always take a break here at 4:20 in the Pacific time zone. So, Bob, what you got for us for our tune?
This is Kid Chemist. He's out of Memphis. He's a buddy of mine who's been making tracks for a few years, and he's just been getting really good. I'm going to put this song out on my record label, Broken Souls. It's called Eden. Should be in the folder. I just uploaded it.
All right. Let's get to what was it called again?
Eden, E-D-E-N.
Eden. Okay, so I better get that because that's not the one I had loaded up ready to go here, but that's okay. I understand the upload situation.
It's labeled Kid Chemist Eden.
Kid,
for Kid.
There it is, Kid Chemist. Got it. All right, well, let's get to that tune. Kid Chemist with a Q. Q-E-M-I-S-T. Kid Chemist with Eden. Thanks a lot, Bob. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week, Russ.
Thank you.
I'm Trickster Phillips from St. Charles County, Missouri, and you're listening to 420radio.org.
As a police officer, I walked a beat, served on the vice squad and SWAT team, and became an expert on drug addiction. I saw firsthand the effects of Ohio's destructive marijuana laws. Simply put, they don't work. Ohio spends over $100 million each year on this failed effort. It's time for marijuana reform, so law enforcement can spend their time cracking down on real criminals and making Ohio a safer place for our families. Vote yes on 3.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to 420 Radio. Listen Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific for Canna Truths, podcasting at cannatruths.com. Canna Truths is your premier source for cannabis-related news and events around the U.S. and the world. Denton Ramsey is a writer for over 15 years and a cannabis activist and began Canna Truths in December of 2011. Check our online listings for Canna Truths with Denton Ramsey from cannatruths.com.
I remember the day Addison was born. She was just perfect. But then the seizures started, up to 1,000 a day from severe epilepsy. Nothing we tried or the doctors tried worked. So we moved our family from Ohio to Colorado to try medical marijuana. Now Addison only has a few seizures a day, and she's a kid again. We want to move back to Ohio, but we can't because her medicine is illegal there. It's time for marijuana reform.
I think that last commercial makes the point. Patients can't wait.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
My name's Terry, and I'm a law abider.
Hi, Terry. That's the streets with the irony of it all. But yeah, that last commercial. That woman's kid needs cannabis oil now. She doesn't need cannabis oil when the next philanthropist decides to pony up $20 million to try to legalize Ohio, maybe sometime in the late 2010s, early 2020s. Her kid needs medicine now. And for some reason, that argument that I've always... This is part of the fun that I'm having with this debate with so many of my colleagues, is I'm using the same exact arguments and framing they used for years to get me to support some shitty medical marijuana compromise or some shitty recreational marijuana compromise. The same arguments. I was told for every CBD oil bill that I predicted would be a bad thing because it would forestall the progress of legalization in some of those states by allowing Republicans who oppose medical marijuana to say, well, I did support the real medical marijuana that doesn't get you high. I was told not to worry about that, Russ. Don't worry about that, Russ, because patients can't wait. Those little kids with epilepsy, my gosh, they can't wait. You have to support this CBD-only bill. Patients can't wait. Unless they're in Ohio. Unless someone in Ohio we don't like might get rich. Then fuck the patients. Fuck the epileptic kids. They can wait. That may be a little too binary for you out there. Maybe that's not nuanced enough. After all, I mean, she could always just pick up and move to Colorado, right? Move the kid to Michigan, right? That would be better than allowing a marijuana legalization to proceed that mandates 10 places where weed can be grown. Because, my God, that would be a terrible precedent. They might take that to Michigan or Illinois or Kentucky and try to legalize with that. Oh, no. It gets really frustrating, folks, and I kind of feel like I'm on an island here, so maybe I'm lashing out because I'm feeling a little attacked and a little unsupported in being a marijuana legalizer. And I think, and I've tweeted to this effect, I think there's a few too many middle-aged white men resting on their privilege in this situation. Of course, I'm not talking about Engayo, but other folks. But then even in Gaio, comes from the Northern California hippie ethos, where everybody smokes pot and nobody gives much of a shit about it anyway, and has existed for the past 19 years in quasi-legal California, where there's not much to worry about. So maybe my perspective is different because I grew up a toker in Idaho. My growers and dealers weren't the family-friendly Northern California hippies or Southeastern Ohio hippies just trying to earn a living. My growers and dealers were directly affiliated with the Mexican mafia. I've seen guns drawn and bullets fly over weed deals. I've seen alleged snitches beaten to a pulp and sitting in hospital beds. Friends of mine are still in the Idaho State Penitentiary over weed. And friends of mine who've been in the Idaho State Penitentiary over weed are now trying to rebuild their lives after asset forfeiture took away from them most of their assets. So to me, every state that legalizes is one state closer to Idaho legalizing. Maybe that will happen before my parents die, so I don't have to look over my shoulder when I visit them. Every drive I make to Nampa, Idaho, just 35 miles over the Oregon border, is 35 miles of driving where I'm terrified that any traffic accident or police encounter could mean a DUID charge or finding some speck of marijuana in my car that I didn't that I failed to remove before leaving town, or just being subject to being arrested for who I am, because in Idaho, it's a misdemeanor to merely be high in public. If cops have a reason to test your urine or blood and they find THC or metabolites in it, you're guilty. Whether you got pot on you or not, whether you're driving or not, you can go to jail for 3 months. So maybe that's why my perspective's a little different. Oh, and speaking of the DUID charges, maybe part of why I'm so determined on this Ohio thing is because I already had to come to a very difficult moral decision supporting Washington's I-502 3 years ago. I've always said that I'll support any legalization that improves the status quo for marijuana consumers, but the trouble for me was that I-502 was a bit of a wash. It improved my status quo for possession and shopping, but it degraded my status quo for driving, and it maintained the status quo for home growing, otherwise known as none. In the very beginning, when it was first announced, I was actually anti I-502. For those reasons. No home grow? No. Vote against it. But after I... Oh, and per se DUID, fuck that, vote against it. But after speaking with my colleagues in the major marijuana reform organizations that were pumping millions of dollars and tons of airtime in support of I-502, I was convinced that these compromises were necessary to get the win, and that the win was so monumental it would overshadow the negatives, and that we'd eventually fix the negatives. And I'm glad they convinced me, because they were right. Legalization changed everything. A loss in Washington, coupled with Oregon's 2012 loss, would have left Colorado as some sort of fluke. Alaska and Oregon likely wouldn't have attempted 2014. So I am just perplexed as to why those anti-consumer sacrifices were worth it. But I'm supposed to reject a pro-consumer legalization in Ohio that's better than Washington's for not having home, for not having per se DOID, that's better than Washington's for allowing home grow, that's better than Washington's in having a much higher limit on how many pot shops there will be, that's better than Washington's for having medical marijuana for which you cannot get arrested and you can use your medical marijuana at work. I'm supposed to be against all that, Ohio legalization being better than Washington's I-502, because it's anti-dealer. Because weed dealers won't get rich. Now, originally in Ohio, there was no home grow in their issue 3. And if they had kept home grow out of it, I was ready to be vocally against it for that reason. Locking up commercial growing with no home grow remedy may have been odious enough to earn my disapproval. But to complain about 10 commercial marijuana farms when there will be tens of thousands of home grows seems very Chicken Little to me. Do you hate the oligopoly? Fine. Don't buy from them. Grow your own. buy from a friend who grows his own, you know, like you do now under prohibition, but without the threat of harassment, tickets, and arrest. And then the medical marijuana part. For years now, I've watched as medical marijuana laws have gotten shittier and shittier. We go from California's quasi-legalization to home grows and dispensaries to dispensaries only without home grow to dispensaries that don't dispense the whole plant to states that only allow CBD oil if you smuggle it in from out of state. And at every stage, in every state, major reform organizations sold me on the idea of incrementalism. Legislative states require more sacrifices and compromises. Eastern voters are more reticent. And any baby step forward is progress. Oh, and most of all, used like a cudgel to beat back any legitimate complaints, patients can't wait. But now, apparently, patients can wait if the wrong people profit. Now, the trembling epileptic kid's parents can keep risking the felony for cannabis oil because a cartel will profit. I mean, not Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, or Merck, but, you know, the new cartel. Now, the stage 4 cancer patient should just hang on until, you know, whenever someone else ponies up $20 million to legalize his medicine. So why is a cartel of 10, 6, 5, 4, or 2 rich growers selling cannabis medicine in Eastern legislative medical marijuana states an acceptable compromise, but 10 pre-owned farmlands with numerous lessees growing cannabis medicine is not acceptable? Well, one colleague tells me those compromises were necessary because they're not initiative states. But apparently nobody was putting up any initiatives in Ohio until issue 3 made their compromise. And it looks like that compromise was necessary since George Soros, Peter Lewis, and John Sperling weren't funding anything there in the near future. And finally, some people are upset at me at what they perceive to be name-calling. Specifically, calling people prohibitionists. Many longtime marijuana reformers who've done great work that I respect deeply take umbrance to being called a prohibitionist, feeling it is unfair for me to call them such when they support legalization in general, but just not this legalization. But what is the proper term for someone who votes against legalization and in doing so maintains prohibition? What do you call someone who joins Kevin Sabet, cops, prosecutors, jailers, rehabbers, and drug testers in voting to maintain the status quo that funds those entities by ruining cannabis consumers' lives? The ballot doesn't have marks for yes, no, and no, but it has marks for end prohibition and keep prohibition. It reminds me of the joke about the guy who complains he built 1,000 bridges, but nobody calls him Larry the Bridge Builder, but fuck one goat, and what do they call him? Unlike the joke, however, just because you're a prohibitionist on this one legalization vote doesn't mean you're a prohibitionist forever. Indeed, on November 4th, whether issue 3 fails or succeeds, I'll count many of them as legalizers again as we work together on 2016's efforts in 6 states. Assuming they don't find business faults in any of those. But should issue 3 fail, I will be reminding every person ticketed or arrested and every patient that suffers or dies until the next legalization comes along in Ohio that it wasn't me who fucked the goat.
Hello, Oregon Hemp Convention. I know I have friends here in the audience and that don't want me to speak to a mostly empty crowd. So if you're friends with Bradley Steinman, come sit down. Water law and cannabis. What could water possibly have to do with a plant? Well, my name is Bradley Steinman. I'm an attorney here in Oregon. I used to be an intern in law school for John Lucey IV, a normal committee member, an Oregon marijuana attorney. Then I was also an intern for Lee Berger, The dude who wrote the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act and was a founding member of Voter Power and helped get the OMA passed. He also helped write Measure 91. And getting to work for Lee helped me to be able to do political stuff, and I was able to help out the last couple legislative sessions with some of that, with getting dispensaries legalized and regulating the supply system and working on Measure 91. I got to write one line in it and help out with some of the finalized language at like the 30th draft. So I started my own law firm, and it's Green Business Law LLC. I focus on cannabis law in Oregon, and I'm here to help people become legal and get in compliance and hopefully sooner than later make lots of money and change the world. So what are the ingredients in growing a healthy live plant? Well, there's dirt or nutrients, and then there's light, either from the sun or from possibly a lamp or an LED light or that sort of thing. And then the third ingredient would be H2O, water. Measure 91, section 1, the very first thing after it says, be it enacted by the people of the state of Oregon, is some purposes and intent that kind of line up with the Cole memorandums, 8 federal policy priority interests for federal law enforcement. And that's intentional. Has to do with some federal preemption stuff. And constitutional law, it's technical, nobody really cares but me. But the point of it is that right off the bat, what's Measure 91 and legalization about? It's about eliminating the problems caused by the uncontrolled manufacture or production, cultivation, of marijuana. That means unlicensed, unregulated, not controlled, no counting, no quantity, no sort of security, and just complete lack of regulation and oversight by the government. And the goal of legalizing is to remedy that. And why? Because the people of the state of Oregon intend that the state law should prevent the growing of marijuana on public lands and the attendant public safety and environmental dangers posed by marijuana production on public lands. And basically, this means, 30,000 plant gardens in national forests, state forests, the state waters being infiltrated with waste, and, basically preventing environmental degradation. If legalizing cannabis means that there's going to be a negative effect on the environment, it's not worth legalizing. So to me, it's very important. So what are the environmental externalities of unregulated cannabis production? We'll talk about that. But one thing that I wanted to point out, water, especially fresh water, is a finite resource. And as it turns out, we're experiencing one of the most severe droughts in history, in hundreds of years, all along the West Coast. It's gotten worse progressively since about 2011-12, when I-502 passed in Washington and Amendment 64 in Colorado. It was less of an issue than CO2 emissions from indoor grows and energy efficiency sort of issues. Water was kind of not really being talked about. But since that time, water law issues have really come to the forefront because of these incredible droughts. And, if you look at this picture, you'll see how much of Oregon this last summer was declared to be in an emergency drought situation by Governor Brown. So unregulated cultivation, which is what we want to avoid. That's why we have Section 19 of Measure 91. That's why we have Section 475304 of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. That's the grower registration provision. And that's why we have Section 81 of HB 3400. So we're trying to avoid the threat of environmental degradation that was the result of national and state cannabis prohibition. If you are not regulating and legalizing, and people are just putting soil amendments and nitrates and whatever they're putting into their soil all over the place, they're leaving a bunch of stuff, and they're sucking up water from places they shouldn't be and polluting it right back out, and they're not implementing environmental best practices. they're not careful about their discharging of waste, and there's no oversight of what they're doing, they're going to grow as much as they can, and they're probably going to be related to like a DTO, you know, an international drug trafficking organization, and all they're doing is trying to make as much money as possible and skirt the law as much as possible. You know, the environment means nothing to them, and they don't care about, you know, the harm to wildlife. They don't care about polluting rivers that people get their drinking water somehow related to or from. They don't care about killing endangered species. And they don't care about our health or the health of the environment. So there's a potential for devastating impacts on water quality, public health, wildlife, and the environment from cannabis prohibition. And what we want to do is regulate it. That's what we're doing as a state. And we want to show the federal government and show ourselves that this experiment in legalization can work. And one of the measures of that, not just according to me, but according to the federal government in the Cole memo, is going to be whether or not our state is doing an adequate job of protecting the environment. This is a picture of Lake Shasta. You see that? When I came to Oregon in 2010, I drove to San Francisco for the first time with Sam Chapman to go to Oaksterdam University and attend Students for Sensible Drug Policy National Strategy Summit. And aside from getting to get high with Richard Lee, which was awesome, before Oaksterdam got raided, I got to pass by beautiful Lake Shasta, which if you go back to the previous slide, Brian, could you go back? That's what it looked like when I drove by the first time. There was people boating, there was sailboats, there was just this beautiful park, just amazingly gorgeous atmosphere. I couldn't believe how wonderful it looked. I'm from Illinois and went to college in Indiana. We didn't have stuff like mountains and beautiful parks like this. And, you know, it's being on the West Coast that really, you know, gets me going and excited. I love the environment out here. That's one of the reasons I live here. And I just thought it was so beautiful. And then, like, 2 years later, 3 years later, I was going down to San Francisco for the California Normal Conference a little bit after Measure 80 failed in the 2012 election. It was like January, February. And I missed corporate income tax class to go to this normal conference with Lee Berger and some other people. And on the way there, it looked like this when I drove by the same place. I went right over that bridge, and it was mind-blowing. It's absolutely amazing how severe the drought is, and it's not bullshit. It's serious in Oregon, and it's more severe in California and in their Central Valley. And it's very much a debatable thing to what degree, you know, unregistered, unlicensed grows in California in the, you know, Emerald Triangle region. Their siphoning of water is leading to this sort of thing. You know, Lake Shasta is like a reservoir, and they could kind of pick and choose how much water they're going to drain. But I was driving around Mendocino County on an unrelated excursion to California, and I was shocked by how many dry riverbeds I saw with just like nary a little tiny stream where there used to be a big raging river, and you could see, you know, the sedimentary layers of how recently there used to be, you know, healthy, you know, environmentally strong rivers and, you know, watersheds and things of this nature, and it's just very sad what's going on. All right, so this is why water law is important. We also need water to live as humans. We can't drink salt water. And I don't want to be like Bear Grylls. Oh, gross. Sorry. All right, I'm going to introduce to y'all now a colleague of mine from law school. This is my friend Brian Sheets. He is a water law expert. He used to work for the United States Attorney's Office and the Oregon Department of Agriculture. He was on the Lewis and Clark Law School Law Review. So pretty much in every way, he impresses me. And aside from my depth of experience with cannabis law, this is something that I would really kind of defer to him. And on the water law stuff that I've worked on for clients, Brian's been a great resource for me because, you know, you'll be able to confer with other attorneys. So I'm pleased to introduce and honored to share the stage with my friend Brian Sheets. Give it up for Brian.
Hey, thanks, Brad. I really appreciate it. So I just want to give my thanks for the invitation, the ability, and the ability to address people here. So what I'm going to talk about real quick is just about Oregon water rights. And so Oregon water, it starts from the principle that all of the water belongs to the people of Oregon. And the Oregon Water Resources Department in the state is able to give people the ability to use that water for specific purposes. So to be able to use the water, you either have to have a permit from the state to be able to use that or to fall within an exemption. So to apply for a that's how you get your water. And you have your primary appropriators. Those are the people who are getting water directly from the environment, whether that be from a well, whether that be from surface water, or if you're able to possibly collect it from natural rainwater. But the state is very interested in where all the water goes and where it comes from. So you want to make sure that any sort of operation you're doing, it has a firm supply of water, and then that water fits within the use that the state has in mind. So your primary appropriators get it directly from the natural resource. Your secondary appropriators are going to be if you get it from, like, a municipality. So the municipality is the initial appropriator, whether it has well permits, well water certificates, or if they have a stream diversion that they're getting their water from. So, and the way that people get their water is through their applications for a water rights permit. That's your initial starting point. So you'll identify the location and the source of water that you want to use. You apply to the Oregon Water Resources Department, and if it's an approved use and there's water available, they'll go through a review process, and the next thing you'll get is a water supply permit. So the water supply permit gives you the ability to develop that water and apply it to beneficial use. And so beneficial use is using it in agriculture, using it for domestic purposes, using it for recreation purposes. Right, there's all sorts of different uses for water. Storage rights, fire suppression, all kinds of different uses. And those kind of uses have to be explained to the department so that they understand where the water is going, how much water is available. Because the next guy who comes down the line is going to want to know if there's water available, and the Water Resources Department is going to say, yeah, either it's available or it's not. Another important use that has caught on within the past three, four decades is in-stream water rights. And that's water that's reserved to stay in the stream for the benefit of fish and wildlife. So these are some very important balances that the Water Resources Department is trying to understand. You want to make sure that there's enough water for people to use for their grow operations, for their agricultural needs, for their domestic water supplies. But they also want to make sure that there's enough water for the muskrats and for the salmon. Salmon's a real big hot issue, especially when it comes to tribal.
There's a little bit of the presentation at the Oregon Hemp Convention from Bradley Steinman on other legal issues, water rights and such, that apply to our newly legal cannabis industry. Sometimes I get people asking, now that it's legal, do you really need normal? And what all these marijuana attorneys going to do? Well, you're finding it out, folks. They're turning to the regulatory side, the civil side, the business side of marijuana legalization. There's actually more work for lawyers under legalization, and at least better clients who can pay, than there is under prohibition. Oh, take off the tinfoil hats, people. 21 days until marijuana legalization in the state of Ohio. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.